जयराधमाधव कुंज बिहारी गोपीजन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी। जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी गोपीजन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी। यशोदा नंदन ब्रज जन रंजन यशोदा नंदन ब्रज जन रंजन यमुना तीर वन चारी यमुना तीर वन चारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी गोपीजन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी। जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी गोपीजन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी। हरे कृष्ण।
जय ओम विष्णुपाद परमहंस परिव्राज काचार्य अष्टोत्तर शत श्री श्रीमद हिज डिवाइन ग्रेस अभय चरणारविंद भक्ति वेदांत स्वामी श्री प्रभुपाद की अनंत कोटि वैष्णव वृंद की ग्रंथराज श्रीमद भागवतम की बलराम पूर्णिमा की जय। और प्रेमानंदे हरि बोल। श्रीमद भागवतम कैंटो 10 चैप्टर 63 चैप्टर 65 लॉर्ड बलराम विजिट्स वृंदावन टेक्स्ट 3 चिरम न पाही दाशार्ह सानुजो जगदीश्वरः इत्यारोप्यांकम आलिंग्य नेत्रै शिशिचतुर्जलै चिरम न पाही दाशार्ह सानुजो जगदीश्वरः इत्यारोप्यांकम आलिंग्य नेत्रै शिशिचतुर्जलै चिरं न पाहि दाशार्ह सानुजो जगदीश्वरः इत्यारोप्यांकम आलिंग्य नेत्रै शिशिचतुर्जलै चिरं न पाहि दाशार्ह अनुजो जगदीश्वरः त्यारोप्यांकम आलिंग्य जलै न पाहि दाशार्ह सानुजो जगदीश्वरः त्यारोप्यांकमालिंग्य इत्रै शिशिचतुर्जलै सानुजो जगदीश्वरा प्यारो प्यंकमालिंग्या शिशि चतुर्जल वैष्णवीस चिरम न पाही दाशारा जगदीश्वर इत्यारोप्य मालिंग इत्रै शिशि चतुर्जल चिरम फॉर अ लॉन्ग टाइम न आज पाही प्लीज प्रोटेक्ट दाशार ओ डिसेंडेंट ऑफ दाशार सो टुगेदर विथ अनुज योर यंगर ब्रदर जगत ऑफ द यूनिवर्स ईश्वर द लॉर्ड इति दस सेइंग आरोप्य रेजिंग अंकम ऑन टू देयर लैप्स आलिंग्य एम्ब्रेसिंग नेत्रै फ्रॉम देयर आईज शिशि चतुः दे मॉइस्टेंड जलै विथ द वाटर Nandan Yashoda said, prayed, O descendant of Dashahara, O Lord of the universe, may you and your younger brother Krishna ever protect us. Saying this, they raised Sri Balaram onto their laps, embraced him and moistened him with tears from their eyes. Purport by the followers of Srila Prabhupada, Srila Jiva Goswami comments on this verse as follows. Nanda and Yashoda prayed to Sri Balaram, may you, along with your younger brother, protect us. Thus they expressed their respect for the fact that he is the elder brother, and they also showed how much they considered him their own son. Om Ajnana Timirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Nama Om Vishnupadaya कृष्ण प्रेष्ठाय भूतले श्रीमते भक्ति वेदांत स्वामी इति नामिने नमस्ते सरस्वती देवे गौरवाणी प्रचारिणे निर्विशेष शून्यवादी पाश्चात्य देशतारिणे वांछाकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपा सिंधुभ्यैव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधार श्रीवासादि गौर भक्तवृंद हरे कृष्णा कृष्णा हरे 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 राम 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 हरे 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 कृष्णा So today on the auspicious occasion of the appearance day of Lord Balaram, I'll try to speak on the topic of how Balaram is the best friend of Krishna. So I'll speak primarily based on Gopal Champu, which gives a very intimate and Vrindavan-centered perspective of Krishna Leela. So I'll talk about four attributes which illustrate this intimate friendship, and it is centered on an acronym PEAR or peer, P-E-A-R. So this particular verse is from the chapter where Balaram has come to Vrindavan on behalf of Krishna, and that we will discuss in the course of the class represents a zenith of Balaram's acting as Krishna's friend. And how that is so, we'll discuss. But here, when Balram is in front of Mother Yashoda and Nanda Maharaj, they are delighted to see him. They are also remembering Krishna. And this remembrance of Krishna, even in the absence of Krishna, is what Balaram evokes. And Balaram, we'll discuss toward the conclusion how Balaram represents the Guru Tattva. And one understanding of Krishna consciousness in the material world is to feel the presence of Krishna in his absence. So this is what, although Balaram, Krishna is not there, just seeing Balaram is reminding Nanda Maharaj and Yashoda about Krishna. And they're praying, may both of you protect us. So let's look at this. Normally when we talk about friendship, there can be different kinds of friends. And one major test of friendship is the first attribute. How long does it last? So persistence. Now, we may have many friends. Some friends last for some time. And some friends, we are friends for a long time. But for a long time, we are distant friends. That means not close friends for a long time. So especially if to have a close friendship and to have that friendship persevere over a long time. You know, that is extremely difficult because first of all, situations change. So not just situations change, even people change. Who we were maybe 5, 10, 15 years ago is different from who we are. So if you look at similarly Krishna's life, Krishna's life, we can say, had broadly three major phases which could be associated with the three major places where Krishna lived. Which were these three places that Krishna lived? Vrindavan, Mathura and Dwarka. Yes, thank you. So now if you see the 90 chapters of the 10th canto, the first 40 chapters are about Krishna living in Vrindavan. The next 10 chapters are about Krishna in Mathura. And the remaining 40 chapters are not precisely about Krishna in Dwarka, but rather Krishna based in Dwarka. Krishna travels through various places. And actually in the last 40 chapters, the number of chapters of that happen with Krishna in Dwarka are about half of them. Krishna is out of Dwarka quite a bit. So we can say in terms of, say, our language, when Krishna was in Vrindavan, he was like a resident devotee. When Krishna is in Dwarka, he's like a traveling devotee. He's not there so much of the time. Now, in all these three phases, things change for Krishna. Krishna in Vrindavan, he has a particular set of associates. Then Krishna, when he goes to Mathura, his set of associates change. The environment changes. It's a complete change from a very rural environment, a pastoral environment, to an urban environment. And actually, then after that, he moves to Dwarka. Dwarka is, of course, very cosmopolitan, but at the same time, it is very remote. So Mathura is very centrally located. Dwarka is far away. So Dwarka has the, you could say, the cosmopolitan nature of Mathura and also the secluded aspect of Vrindavan. So Krishna integrates both of them when he creates Dwarka. At the same time, if we see, in all these three places, who are the people who are with Krishna throughout? Yes? Yes, two of them. Yes. Rohini and Balram. Thank you. So now, of course, Rohini is there. The Gopal Champu describes that when Krishna comes from Mathura to, from Vrindavan to Mathura, at that time it is first Krishna and Balram come. And of course, the Maharaj and some other cowherd men are there. But Yashoda, Rohini don't come at that time. So throughout, the person who is most there with Krishna is Balram. Because even when Krishna is in Mathura, he goes for some time to Sandipani Mun's ashram. And that time, of course, Rohini is not there with him. That time Balaram is there. So over all these phases, the person most with Krishna is Balaram. And that persistence, in fact, Balaram is born slightly earlier, and right from, or appears, and right till the end of his life, you know, they are almost always together. So that persistence itself is remarkable through various phases of life. But more than persistence, when there is friendship, it is not just that two people are physically together, but it is more of a mutual understanding that is required. So that brings us to the next point, that is empathy, to understand the other person. Now, within the bhakti tradition, in the understanding of God, there are two simultaneous and contradictory trends. One is to divinize Krishna, and the other is to humanize Krishna. Now, divinize means to show how Krishna is not an ordinary person. Krishna is a supreme person. That is to understand Krishna's greatness. Now, Srila Prabhupada would often say that we should never think of Krishna as an ordinary person, as an ordinary human being. That is true. At the same time, Krishna in Vrindavan especially, and of course in other places also, if understood from the Vrindavan mood, is not just a god who delights in his majestic loftiness, majestic self-isolation. So God wants intimate relationships. And relationships require many things. But one aspect is, you know, lovability requires vulnerability. Lovability requires vulnerability. When in every relationship, whenever there is love, it has various aspects. You know, we want to feel loved in the relationship. But we don't just want to feel loved. We also want to feel needed. Needed and valued in the relationship. When we feel needed, then that increases the proximity of the relationship. Suppose, say someone has a child. Now, at one level, the parents want their child to be a wonderful person. They would like the child to be perfect in many ways. But still, you know, if we consider, every child has certain limitations. Somebody might be very physically well-built, but may not be so intelligent. Somebody might be very intelligent, but they might not be so, have so much social skills. Or so many things are there like that. So now, if somebody could genetically or biologically engineer, now there is a whole effort going on that there is a thought that we can genetically engineer the progeny so that only those children who have the qualities that the parents want, the corresponding genes, if they are in the child, only that child will be born, other children will be aborted. So it's not just for convenience or other things, it's also for specific choice. It's not taken off, but it's called eugenics, a field. But suppose, say somebody, if we removed all that makes a child vulnerable, then it is that vulnerability that creates lovability. When there is a small infant who is helpless, that evokes love. In the Western world and even in India, there are many superheroes. In fact, superheroes is like a big multi-billion dollar business. So if you look at the history of superheroes also, when Superman started off, it was, I think, 1930s, 1940s, it caught the public imagination and he started becoming popular. But then as he started becoming more and more popular, then they started, the successive generations of comics makers and movie makers, they started making him more and more powerful. So till he became so powerful that, you know, just by lifting his hand, Superman could blow up a whole entire planet. And the more powerful Superman became, the more his popularity went down. Because there is no challenge in it. If he can do anything, then what is the challenge? Then they created a vulnerability in Superman. So that they call it as Superman's kryptonite. So he is vulnerable to kryptonite. And then since that in the Western vernacular, you know, it is said that to deal with a person, you have to find out that person's kryptonite. You know, find out. So there is a sarcastic, there is a, like a humorous saying. For some people, a stranger is just a person whose weaknesses you haven't yet found out. So when some people meet another person, they're just looking, what are the weaknesses? So the point is that if somebody is all powerful, all just then there is no challenge. Then there is, if there is no challenge, there is no excitement. So both from the perspective of vulnerability creating lovability and vulnerability creating excitement. So Krishna as God. So I said, at one side, there is the Bhakti tradition divinizes God. Divinizes Krishna means stresses that Krishna is not an ordinary person. Krishna is God. As he, for example, reveals himself in the while exhibiting the Virat Rupa. So although Krishna is like one person on one chariot on the Kurukshetra battlefield, which is just one, on one part of one planet in one universe. So although Krishna is inside the universe is inside Krishna. So such pastimes, or even in Mathura, in Dwarka, in Vrindavan Leela also, Krishna's whole universe in the mouth, these divinize Krishna. But simultaneously, the Bhakti tradition also humanizes Krishna. Humanizes doesn't mean reduce him to be human being, but reveals how he also has emotions similar to what we human beings have. And of course, rather than saying he has emotions similar to what we human beings have, rather we can say the human emotions are reflections of the emotions that Krishna has with his devotees. And of course, our emotions might be are often distorted to some extent. But from our perspective, we don't know about Krishna. We start with ourselves as the reference point. So what do we mean by humanizing? That Gopal Champu describes how, not just Krishna's heroic achievement in overthrowing and killing Kamsa. That's described and that's stupendous. You know, it's Krishna's entry into Mathura is dramatic. If suppose there is like a maybe like a World Wrestling Federation championship and there's a complete unknown character who is just not even a seeded player, and he comes and he just defeats the champion effortlessly. And so like that, Krishna comes and destroys Kamsa and it's sensational. But what Gopal Champu also describes is after that what happens to Krishna. And that is where Balram plays a vital role. Krishna's plan is actually when he leaves Vrindavan that he will come to come to Mathura and kill Kamsa and then he will go back to Vrindavan. When he has told the gopis, I'll come back, he actually meant that I'll come back in a few days. But then, as soon as Kamsa is killed, then the Yadus come there. And the Yadus tell Krishna that you should take the crown now. And they actually bring the crown and offer it to him. And Krishna says that I'm just a mere boy right now. You have among you Maharaj Ugrasen. Kamsa unlawfully usurped the throne from him. And it is he who should become the king. Now this deference to elders, it very much pleases the Yadus. And when Ugrasen accepts the crown, which had been taken away from him, the Yadus cheer. And then Krishna says that please, now that righteousness has been restored, let me take leave and go to Vrindavan. And the Yadus become panicky. Says, No, you cannot go to Vrindavan. You need to be with us. Says, Kamsa had many demoniac allies. And they will attack us to take to revenge his death. And even if they don't attack, Kamsa, because he was a demon, he also had made enemies. So we are vulnerable both to be attacked by the allies of Kamsa and by the enemies of Kamsa. And we need you to protect us. Krishna says, now at this point, Krishna is just a small child. Krishna is, in one sense, he's the divine and he's all powerful. But in another sense, he's just a 10-year-old boy. And for a 10-year-old boy, just to go to a new place at one level is exciting. But suppose somebody goes to a new place and then it's like a child is taken to some hill station to see the hill station. And then he goes to the hill station and says, okay, this is your boarding school, stay here now. What? The child is not emotionally prepared for that. So it is like that. Krishna has gone to visit Vrindavan, visit Mathura. And then now this whole thing comes, you have to stay here. And then on top of that, when Krishna is reluctant, the Yadus tell him that actually, why do you want to go to Vrindavan? You belong to us. Krishna says, no, I am the son of Nanda Maharaj and Yashoda. He says, no. The prophecy was that it is Vasudev's eighth son who will kill Kamsa. You killed Kamsa, therefore you are Vasudev's eighth son. Not only do you have a duty to protect us, but you belong to the Yadus. You are a Yadu. You need to stay here. So normally, if a child has to stay in a boarding school, then it is the parents who pacify the child. But in the case of Krishna, because the Yadus tell him to stay there, now Krishna cannot say no. It is Krishna who has to go and pacify his parents. It is Krishna who has to tell Nanda Maharaj that the Yadus are claiming that I am their son because of that prophecy. Nanda Maharaj, deep in his heart, is always dreading this possibility. Whenever there is love, one aspect of love is there is always the fear of loss. And then death is what happens over here. And Nanda Maharaj starts laughing sarcastically and he says, now it is our fortune that which belongs to us is being claimed by great people. Now Jiva Goswami says this, that this is being sarcastic. You know, he's saying that actually, why should great people steal that which belongs to us, small people? But he's saying it is actually my misfortune. But he's saying it is our fortune. And he laughs. He says, sometimes the only way to not cry is to laugh. So life can be so sometimes heartbreaking that either we can cry at the tragedy or we can laugh at the absurdity of what is happening. So then somehow Krishna pacifies Nanda Maharaj and then goes back. For Krishna it's a new environment, and at the same time the Yadus, at least for Krishna, what happens is that he is suddenly transported from Vrindavan to Mathura, and naturally he wants to talk about the Vrindavan Vasis, how wonderful they were, what all times he had. And every time Krishna talks about the Vrajavasis, the Mathura Vasis become alarmed. They start thinking, if Krishna is so much in love with Vrindavan, he'll go to Vrindavan. And then that's why, generally, that's why they start showing their disapproval whenever Krishna talks about Vrindavan. And then naturally, see, we all are very responsive. And especially children are very responsive. A child may pick up a toy and then looks at the mother. And the mother smiles, the child picks up the toy. Mother frowns, okay, the child will put down the toy. Isn't it? So children are responsive. Similarly, we all are responsive. When I travel across the world, I go to one place where there is one devotee who comes and sits right in the front. And after sitting in the front, throughout the class, he glares at me. Not even stares, glares. And no matter what I speak, there is just no response except glaring. So the first time that happened, I was very uncomfortable. And strangely, he comes for every class. So now, the only way I can give a class over there is, I don't look at that devotee. Look at everyone else. But imagine if I were speaking right now and every one of you started glaring at me. I'd say, what did I do wrong? So for Krishna, it is like that. That everybody in Mathura becomes alarmed and disapproves whenever he starts speaking about Vrindavan. And thus he just can't speak about Vrindavan to anyone except one person. Who is that? That is Balaram. So, that is the time. See, when loneliness is a big problem in today's world. And loneliness is not a result so much of being physically alone. That causes loneliness, no doubt. But psychologists say that the most painful loneliness is not when you are, say, physically trapped, say somebody is on an island where there's no other human being. That's one kind of loneliness. But the most painful loneliness is when we are surrounded by people who don't understand us. Who don't understand us. You know, that is, we feel emotionally choked by that. So for Krishna, it's like that. And the only person who protects him from being choked in that way is Balaram. Now, of course, Rohini is also there. So, after some days, when Vasudev sees, now, in general, in our tradition, there is a convention that is followed. That sometimes even good people do bad things. But when good people do bad things, or not necessarily bad, but objectionable things, then quite often, who is that good person doing the... who among the good people is doing a bad thing is not mentioned. So there it is traditionally, it is a face-saving culture. So for example, it is described that many places, if we consider in the Krishna Lila itself, when Balaram comes to Hastinapur, at that time, the marriage of Krishna's son with of Lakshmana, the marriage between the two dynasties is opposed by the Pandavas, and he gets angry and he lifts up with his plow. Now, who are the members of the Kauravas who oppose? Is it Duryodhana? That's unlikely. Duryodhana is quite close to Krishna, to Balaram. So who specifically it is that opposes among the Kuru dynasty, that is not mentioned specifically. So similarly, in Gopal Champu, who among the Yadus is this person who is telling Krishna, don't speak about him. Now, Krishna, you belong to us. That is not highlighted so much. So for example, even in Jiva Goswami, in his Sandarbhas, that when he is commenting, now Jiva Goswami has a very difficult challenge when he is commenting on the Sandarbhas. That Rupa, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has said that, when Jiva Goswami is commenting on the Bhagavatam and the Vedanta Sutra rather, while basically when he is writing the Sandarbhas, he is bringing a link between the Vedanta Sutra and the Bhagavatam. So he, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu referred to Sridhar Swami's commentary as the normative commentary, and he strongly condemned Vallabhacharya, when he said that he has written the commentary critiquing or countering Sridhar Swami's commentary. At the same time, there are places when Sridhar Swami gives a monistic interpretation, Advaitic interpretation. So Jiva Goswami has to counter that. But what Jiva Goswami does is, while countering, whenever he is referring to Sridhar Swami and Sridhar Swami is making a devotional, bhakti-related point, he says, Tika Iti. That, and he's saying that Tika means he's referring to Sridhar Swami's commentary. But whenever he is going to counter what Sridhar Swami says, he doesn't say this is said by Sridhar Swami. He says this is according to an imaginary interpretation. It is said like this, but it is wrong because of this. So the idea is that that whenever somebody is venerable, we don't publicly show that they are wrong. Even if they are wrong, do it in a way that helps that person save face. So, as I said, Jiva Goswami's whole Gopal Champu is from a Vrindavan perspective. And from the Vrindavan perspective, in some ways, the Mathuravasis are the bad guys. Because they take Krishna away from Vrindavan. Not only they take Krishna away, they keep Krishna away. But who are those Mathuravasis? It isn't singled out on this particular Mathuravasi is the person. Now, it's clear that it is not, Vasudev doesn't say, Krishna, you belong to us, you have to stay here. Vasudev is understanding. But still, Vasudev also wants Krishna to be in Mathura. So then when Rohini comes, so Vasudev sees that Krishna is completely uprooted and Krishna is not able to refer to Devaki as his mother. It's a small child. It's not that suddenly you tell that child, okay, she's your mother now. So, what does Krishna do? So, Krishna is not able to relate with her. So, there is this divine aspect where Krishna, when he delivers Nanda Maharaj, when he delivers Vasudeva and Devaki, there are very intimate loving exchanges and Krishna says, that, I failed to do my duty to you till now. I was not able to help you, but I'm happy that I was able to help you. So, that is there. Krishna, at the level of duty, Krishna does his duty to his parents. But an emotional connection takes time. So when Nanda Maharaj sees that Krishna is not able to relate with Devaki, then he says, what to do? He says, I should call Rohini back. And when Rohini comes, she is happy to be with Vasudeva once again, but it is Krishna and Balaram are delighted. They run and hug her legs and hug her and they pour out their heart, how nobody is able to understand them. And then Rohini tries to become their spokesperson and she tries to say that how the Vrajvasis, they offered so much love to Krishna. And then it is described that the Mathuravasis, they start criticizing Rohini. He says that, I thought you belong to us. What is this? He says, is it that the Vrajvasis have fed you so many sweets that you have become a part of their party now? So when they start speaking like this, then Rohini also cannot speak much in favor of Vrindavan. It's only later when Krishna is settled in Dwarka. How settled in Dwarka? When Krishna is married. That time the Vrajavasis start inquiring, what happened to Krishna? And that's when the Rath Yatra pastime's origin comes up. But initially, there's a lot of apprehension. So, the only person with whom Krishna can actually open his heart is Balaram. And not just open his heart, but that person can also reciprocate. Rohini has to restrain herself. She has to actually prove her loyalty to the Mathuravasis. Now, for Balaram, that is not that much of an issue because Balaram is already known to be the son of Rohini. So, although Balaram was in Vrindavan, it is new. Everybody knew that he belonged to Mathura. But with Krishna, there is some ambiguity. And then, after that, Krishna is still not very comfortable in Mathura. Nanda Maharaj, Vasudev decides, let's send him to the Gurukul. And that is where the Krishna book describes how Krishna learned everything very fast. That is true. But even during that time, there's a very beautiful description, Gopal Champu, how after every day, when they would learn various things, Krishna and Balaram would learn various things, and at night, in the evenings and late into the night, Krishna and Balaram would sit together. And they would discuss. they would discuss the pastimes of Vrindavan. They would remember the various Vrajavasis. And as they would remember the various Vrajavasis, they would remember them. Both of them would be in tears. And they would hug each other and try to pacify each other. So although at one level, Avanti, which is modern day Ujjain now, that is somewhat similar to Vrindavan. Because it was also a rural place. The Gurukuls were traditionally in rural places. Even most Western universities, what Princeton or Cambridge or whatever, originally when they started, they were kept away from the cities. Because that is a place where you don't have so many distractions, you can focus on studying. So in some ways, the setting of the Sandipani Mun's ashram in Avanti, that reminded Krishna of Vrindavan much more than Dwarka, than Mathura. But simultaneously, the setting was reminding of Vrindavan, but there was no Vrajavasis over there. So the remembrances were especially intense. And Balaram, at that time, was there for Krishna. So for us, for each one of us, you know, we need to have some people, at least, even at least one person who understands us. And it's difficult, but then we also need to exhibit vulnerability. So generally the world is a tough place and there is competition. So all of us are normally up with our guards. So in the world, as soon as somebody comes to know about our weaknesses, they'll exploit it. It's like a boxing, suppose a boxing match is going on and so one boxer just punches the other boxer on that jaw and other boxer wins. As soon as the other boxer understands this person has winced, oh, that means you have some weakness over here. Then the whole energy of that other boxer will be punch over there itself. And then defeat by just wounding that part more and more. So hit where it hurts. So that's why in general we are afraid of showing our weaknesses. And that is true. Now we can very easily be exploited if we reveal our weaknesses. But at the same time, if we want to have proximity, we have to show our vulnerability. And when we show our vulnerability, the other person reciprocates appropriately. It's suppose we have some senior devotee who always, whoever has any problem, they go to them and they solve the problems. It could be practical problems, it could be philosophical problems, whatever. And then one day that same devotee starts telling, you know, actually this is such a complicated issue. I don't know how to deal with this. I don't know what to do about this. So Giriraj Maharaj has written a book about Srila Prabhupada's, how Srila Prabhupada inspired and guided the building of the Juhu project. It's a magnificent over 600 page book. So Maharaj has been writing it for years now. It's completed. It will come soon by this year end or something like that. So Maharaj sent that book to me for reviewing. So there it describes how for us ISKCON is like started at Prabhupada's time and they're all Prabhupada disciples. But the way Prabhupada was in the 70s and the way Prabhupada was in the 60s or as he was seen by his disciples is very different. In the 60s, it is all the devotees saw Prabhupada very intimately. And their relationship with Prabhupada was significantly different from the relationship of the devotees who were introduced in the 70s. Because by that time, the Krishna consciousness movement had become very big. So, Giriraj Maharaj says that when he met some of Prabhupada's senior disciples, like Tamal Krishna Maharaj and others, they came there and he saw that they were actually arguing with Prabhupada. So Prabhupada was in asking their opinion, you know, what should we do about this? No. They would say this, no, Prabhupada said, no, this is not appropriate. And Prabhupada would say this, and they would say, no, that won't work, Prabhupada. And Giriraj Maharaj said, first I was taken aback. How can you talk with the spiritual master like that? But he said, Prabhupada, what he would do is that, you know, Prabhupada was the acharya always, but there are times with his close disciples, he would ask for advice. He would ask, what do you think? Prabhupada would always do what he felt was the best, but he would ask. And in fact, most of the Western outreach, you know, Prabhupada started our movement in the West, but thereafter most of the Western outreach, Prabhupada left to his Western disciples. Now, he would basically, whenever he would go to the West, he would tell them, where do you want me to go? And he would go over there. So Prabhupada also exhibited this vulnerability, and that was, so when he understood that, he says that was quite a shock for me, how devotees were. Actually, fiercely, there was a to and fro with the spiritual master. But then I understood this is a different flavor. It's a closer flavor. Where the spiritual master trusts you so much that actually when there is, see, it is quite often when there is not trust in the relationship, disagreement is equated with disrespect. But when there is trust in the relationship, we can disagree without coming off as disrespectful. So that's actually an art, how to disagree without being disagreeable or without being disrespectful. So that requires a certain level of trust. So that brings me to the last two parts. We'll see how far we can go. That now Balaram plays many, Balaram does many services for Krishna. So one of the services, so I was talking about P-E-A-R, so at persistence, empathy, then I'll talk about assistance and resistance. That sometimes in friendship, you know, we help the other person do what they want to do. And sometimes we may have to oppose the other person when they want to do something. Because maybe what they're doing is not the right thing. Or maybe we think it's not the right thing. So there is opposition to that. So how does Balaram do these two things? I'll discuss this now. So now, after Krishna comes back, after finishing his Gurukul education to Vrindavan, to Mathura, at that time, Krishna wants to now go to Vrindavan once again. But the Mathura Vasis are afraid. If Krishna goes to Vrindavan, yad gatva nanivartante taddhama paramammam. Krishna will go to Vrindavan and will never come back. So they don't want him to go. In fact, they try to cut off his connections with Vrindavan. So what happens is that Nanda Maharaj keeps sending messengers and spies to check out how Krishna is in Mathura. But then Krishna suddenly disappears from Mathura. And Krishna's, Gopal Champu described that when Krishna goes to the Gurukula of Sandipani Muni, it's kept overall a secret. Why? Because Krishna already has many enemies. And they don't want Krishna to be attacked in Sandipani Muni's ashram. At one level, Krishna might be vulnerable. Of course, Krishna is invulnerable. But then the Sandipani Muni's ashram might get disrupted. So Krishna is there one day and the next day is not there. And nobody knows where Krishna has gone. And the Mathuravasis keep it vague. So the Vrajavasis get alarmed because the Maharaj's messengers have come and they look and they say, there's no Krishna, where is he gone? And nobody answers properly. So they become very alarmed. And when Krishna comes back and the Maharaj's messengers meet him, they say, we didn't know where you had gone. And Nanda Maharaj is in great anxiety, where are you? He says, I want to go and meet. But they say no. The Yadus say no. So at that time, Krishna sends Uddhava. Now Krishna's relationship with Uddhava is also very beautiful, but I won't go into that. Our focus is on Balaram. So Krishna sends Uddhava, and Uddhava gives a message that pacifies the Vrajavasis, especially the gopis. Then he comes back. And then because there are repeated attacks on Mathura, and especially those attackers are coming, often approaching from the area of Vrindavan. And Krishna doesn't want the Vrajavasis to become disrupted. So Krishna decides to relocate. And he relocates to Dwarka. So externally speaking, Krishna relocates to Dwarka to protect Mathura from the repeated attacks. Internally, he relocates so that to protect Vrindavan from repeated disruptions. But then he's further away. And at that time, again, Krishna longs to go back to Vrindavan. And at that time, Balaram voices his desire. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, there are how there can be different levels of servants is described. The top level is one who understands the mind of the master and does that. The second level, one who follows the words. And third is who doesn't follow the words also. So here, Balaram not only understands the heart of Krishna, but actually takes Krishna to task. And Balaram tells Krishna, now how is it that the Vrajavasis, they loved you more than their life and you have just abandoned them? How can you abandon them like that? And then when Uddhava went, you told them through Uddhava that you will come soon. And instead of coming soon, you have moved further away from them. When are you going to go to Vrindavan? So Krishna pours out his heart. And he says, "Is hardly a moment passes when I don't remember Vrindavan. I constantly long to go back." But he said, "I am torn. When it was decided that I'll be in Mathura, at that time Nanda Maharaj told me that obey Vasudev as you would obey me. Treat Vasudev like you treat me." And I can clearly see that Vasudev doesn't want me, that he doesn't want me to leave Mathura, leave Dwarka and go to Vrindavan. So I cannot displease the Yadus. At the same time, I long to go to Vrindavan. What should I do? Then Balaram says, "I will go to Vrindavan." He says, I have been remembering the Vrajavasis for so long. So much. I was hoping that we could go together. But I will go. So, in many ways, the Gopal Champu elaborates what is described in the Bhagavatam. So, the Bhagavatam itself is quite a detailed description of Krishna Leela. At the same time, the Acharyas in their commentaries make it even more detailed. So, the Bhagavatam describes how Balaram had the desire. "I want to go to Vrindavan." And then he decided. So, how that desire came about, that is described in Gopal Champu and other Acharyas' literature. So there Balaram goes, not just because he wants to go, definitely that's reason, but also because he wants to go on behalf of his brother. Now he wants to assure the Vrijavasis that Krishna is not a dishonorable person. That Krishna had said that "I will come back." When he left, Krishna had sent the message to Uddhava that "I will come." So Krishna will come. Generally, you know, who goes as a messenger is also very significant. Because normally, say if some guest has come, some guest comes here, and then if we tell them, okay, you know, they land in Mumbai airport and you say, "Okay, you take a cab and come here." Okay, that's fine, that's one level. But if somebody is an important guest, we will send a vehicle from here to pick them up. If somebody is a very important guest, not only will we send a vehicle, but with just a driver, we will send some devotee to pick up that person. If that person is a very senior person, then maybe the top leader from among us goes to receive that person. So whenever a messenger comes, who is going to receive that also shows a lot of things. So this is not exactly a messenger, but this is something similar. So now, Krishna is the younger brother. And Krishna sending Uddhava, although they are brothers, Uddhava still is subordinate to Krishna. But when Balaram goes, that has its own distinctive weight. It's something similar to Krishna going as the Shanti Dut on behalf of the Pandavas. Krishna is far, far more powerful than the Pandavas. And even Duryodhana knows that. So when Krishna is going as the peace messenger, that shows the seriousness of not just the peace mission, but also the seriousness of Krishna's affection for the Pandavas, that he is ready to become a peace messenger like that. So similarly, Here, when Balaram agrees to go as the peace messenger, that shows the seriousness of his affection. That actually, although Balaram is older to Krishna, but still, he says, I will go on behalf of Krishna. And when he goes on behalf of Krishna, at that time, that is the occasion that is being described here. So he is assisting Krishna in a mission that is, you could say, the closest to his heart. Krishna, nothing is closer to Krishna's heart than the Vrajavasis. And Balaram is carrying out that mission. He is becoming a messenger of Krishna to the Vrajavasis. And Krishna, Balaram doesn't go in a hurry. Okay, just deliver a message and go, come back. It's a message of love and it has to be delivered lovingly. So Balaram spends a significant amount of time. And it's not just a significant amount of time, it is what we do in that time also. You know, we go to a particular place, but we go to that place and we are doing our own work, we don't meet anybody over there. Then that's not of much use. So we go there and then we spend time there. So I met Mr. Radhanath Maharaj in Chicago, and then I was talking to Maharaj about various things. So Maharaj told me that if you have any questions, when you meet me, you ask those questions. You can write emails to me, but don't expect me to respond. So I did ask Maharaj, but Maharaj said that, now if I start responding to emails, what will happen is, the place where I am, I won't have time for the people over there. And then I go to I'll be attending to people at another place when I'm in that place. And then when I go to the next place, people from the previous place will be sending me mails over there. So Vara says, when I go to a place, I give myself to the people at that place. So when I am there, whatever questions you have, you can come and ask me. But don't expect me to answer anything on email. So Maharaj is quite parsimonious, frugal about responding to emails. So, but he gives himself. So when he goes to that place. So similarly, when Balaram comes to Vrindavan, he's completely with the Vrajavasis. He has his own gopis with whom he performs the Ras Leela, and he tells about Krishna's pastimes to all the Vrajavasis, about their not just Krishna's pastime, their what they have done together, what Krishna has done, and in that way he gives himself fully to the Vrajavasis, and thus he pacifies their heart, and that is an extraordinary service. Generally, one aspect of friendship or one aspect of love or affection is that to take a friendship seriously means to take seriously the things that the other person takes seriously. So if something is very important for somebody else, then we also give it due importance. If we take it, why are you getting so worked up about this? No, if they are worked up, they are worked up about it. So we have to take that seriously. So Krishna, not only does Balaram exhibit empathy when Krishna is alone and not understood by anyone, but Balaram assists Krishna in the most intimate way by going to Vrindavan on his behalf. Now for the Mathuravasis or for the Yadus in general, Balaram going to Vrindavan is not a big problem for them, because they know Balaram is a Yadu. And there has never been any doubt about that. So even if he goes there, he will come back. But with Krishna, there is some doubt. So they are not ready to let Krishna go, but Krishna in a sense goes through Balaram. So that is the assistance aspect. And then there is the resistance aspect. This I'll conclude that resistance means that just like we have the concept of the Maushala Leela, where the demons become where certain devotees take on the roles of demons so that Krishna can have a worthwhile tussle. So it is his devotees only who can become that powerful. That's how we know Jaya Vijaya become Hiranyaksha Hiranyakashipu. So that is one way where devotees take up, they become some other person. So the difference is, if you consider Jai Vijay is their personality is entirely different, and Hiranyakashipu, Hiranyaksha, Ravana, Kumbhakarna, their personality is entirely different. But Balaram does something very distinctive. What he does is that he is the same person who takes a different mood. So sometimes Balaram opposes Krishna. And in that sense, Balaram plays a role similar to what Radharani plays. That Radharani sometimes opposes Krishna. It's like we have the pastime of the Mana Mandir, where Radharani is upset with Krishna and Krishna has to endeavor to pacify Radharani. So that opposition, when she is displeased, rather than assisting Krishna's plans, Krishna has to make plans to pacify her. So that brings its own flavor to the relationship. So similarly, there are times when Balaram opposes Krishna. And through that opposition, he brings further flavor and excitement in that relationship. So in some ways, let's consider two incidents where Balaram opposes Krishna. One is when Arjuna wants to marry Subhadra. And the other is when there is a climactic fight between Bhima and Duryodhana. And Bhima hits Duryodhana below the thigh, or below the waist, on the thigh. So, on both these occasions, it is Balaram who opposes. In fact, Krishna goes about making a elaborate scheme or conspiracy so that Arjuna is able to take Subhadra away without Balaram coming to know. And when Balaram comes to know about this, he's furious. And he says, Arjuna has insulted all of us, and Arjuna should be destroyed. And Balaram is ready to fight at that time. So, but at that time, Krishna intervenes. And Krishna says, it is not just Arjuna who wanted, it is not as Arjuna who abducted Subhadra. Subhadra also wanted to do the same thing. He says, we wanted to protect Subhadra, but protecting Subhadra also means protecting her in a way that she is happy. Its protection is not meant for restriction. Protection is meant to provide things by which their satisfaction comes about. So Krishna has to pacify Balaram. But it's quite a dramatic incident when Balaram is about to attack. And Krishna pacifies. But a little more disturbing would be that how does Balaram become Duryodhan's guru? Why teach somebody who is opposed to Krishna? The idea is that every story has to have some basic motifs or some basic themes. So in general, the idea is that there is a state of balance and there is some kind of disruption. And then the hero has to go on a journey of both inner and outer growth by which the disruption is overcome. So that disruption could be that person is that the place where the person is staying is attacked and everything is disrupted. Or that disruption could be that person has to go away from that place. So if we consider any movie, any novel, any historical story, any mythological story, whatever it is, there are certain basic themes to it. So the idea is that whenever there is a disruption for restoration, so there is a particular order. So Krishna was living in Vrindavan, and that's an orderly situation. And then he's told to leave Vrindavan. That's a disruption. And then from the disruption, various things happen. So now when the disruptions happen, it is that usually in most stories there is a good side and a bad side. And depending on how bad the bad side is or how good the good side is, it becomes black, more white or more black. But stories become more and more interesting when there is moral complexity. Moral com, this is bad, this is good. Say Ravana is bad, Ram is good. There is moral clarity, but there is not so much moral complexity. But as compared to the Ramayana, the Mahabharata has much more moral complexity. We have characters who are good, we have characters who are bad, but we have good characters who do bad things, and we have bad characters who do good things. You know, Yudhishthir gambles. Karna is charitable. So that moral complexity creates greater intrigue. In general, for any relationship to be exciting, there has to be a combination of two things: predictability and unpredictability, both. Now, if say somebody is completely unpredictable, then you just can't relate with that person. You know, if it's like we are walking through a landmine, just take one step, boom, what happened? So if somebody is completely unpredictable, then we can't really deal with them very well, because we just don't know what is going to happen with them. But if somebody is completely predictable, then dealing with them becomes boring. It's almost like a programmed machine. You know, if I say this, they will say this. If I say that, they will say that. If I do this, they will do that. So for a relationship to be stimulating, there has to be a healthy blend of predictability and unpredictability. So if there is only moral clarity, then what happens? Then you just know, okay, this person is going to act like this. But when there is moral complexity, then that brings in a certain level of unpredictability. So it's not always that the good person will always do the good things, or the bad person will always do the bad things. Of course, we can say even when good people do bad things, it is orchestrated by the Lord, like Yudhishthira's actions when he gambles. But that's a deeper explanation. From the story's point of view, there is complexity. How could Yudhishthira gamble? That seems to be unusual. So in the character of divinity, see, although all religions talk about God, the conception of God is not exactly the same in all religions. There's a difference between the concept of God there's a difference between the concept of God and the conception of God. The concept refers to the basic attributes of God. Say, for example, God is omnipotent, omniscient, omnipresent. That's the concept of God. Or God, generator, organizer, destroyer. That's the concept of God. But the conception of God is that how is God depicted? So that is different in different traditions. And when there is, so now, In the Abrahamic religions, if we consider in Islam, there is hardly any depiction of Allah except as the giver of wisdom and the giver of knowledge and the ordainer of laws and the deliverer of punishments. There is very little depiction of Allah. Now, in the Christian tradition, God, Christ, is considered completely other. God is so great as to be unknowable. And that's why Christians, for all practical purposes, consider Jesus to be God. They say that's not Advaitavad, because they don't consider everybody to be God. But for all practical purposes, they consider Jesus to be God. And the Bible, the Gospels, they also introduce a moral complexity. Normally, when we hear about Jesus, when he was being crucified, he said, "Forgive them, for they know not what they do." That describes his saintliness. But some of the Gospels describe a more complicated picture. It is said that when Jesus is being crucified, Jesus says, oh Father, why have you forsaken me? And then, why have you forsaken me? And Jesus appears completely broken. So it's as if he expected some miraculous intervention when he was being crucified, and nothing happens, and he's killed. So now, biblical commentators say that shows how even when this world is such a place of temptation, such a place of illusion, that even when the Son of God comes, even he may have moments of doubt. Now some Christian commentators can't tolerate this idea. And they say that is an interpolation. That incident never happened. So there was a whole movie made about the temptations of Jesus and how all various ways Jesus was tempted. And this is considered to be the last temptation. That then when the final test comes, when we expect protection and don't get protection, that time it is easy to feel that we are forsaken by God. So the introducing moral complexity in divinity is actually not very easily done. It's very difficult to do that. Because then we start doubting the divinity itself. The idea is God should be perfect. Perfect means that if God is descending as a, God shouldn't have doubts. So what happens in Krishna Leela is that Balaram is the character through which moral complexity is introduced. That now Balaram is not wrong in educating Duryodhan. So the idea is that is Duryodhan a bad person? Yes, he is bad. Now, is he irredeemably bad? From the philosophical perspective, nobody is irredeemably bad. Nobody absolutely, everybody is a soul who is a part of Krishna, and everybody can be redeemed. Now, of course, some people can be redeemed in this life, some people may take multiple lives to be redeemed. They may not be redeemed at all in this life. So, what Balaram does to Duryodhan is that he offers, Duryodhan wants power. Duryodhan has, we all have certain desires. And some people can just renounce their desires and become spiritual. Some people need to have some desires fulfilled before they can actually focus on something higher. So what Balaram does for Duryodhan is, Duryodhan has this craving for power. And Balaram facilitates that. Balaram trains him in warfare. And the idea is that, see, nobody knows the future. Or of course, we can say Krishna knows the future, but in the Leela, Krishna doesn't act as if he knows the future. So the idea is that if Balaram is if Duryodhan is so so insecure, so power hungry, then if he says he has power, the Pandavas have power, I also have power. So then maybe both of them can have their own space. It's sometimes, you know, so people just need their space. It's not that they want to overthrow somebody else, but they need their space. So you have your space, I have my space, you live yourself, I live myself. But so Balaram gives Duryodhan that chance. That okay, you have your space. So eventually there's a division of the kingdom, there is Indraprastha, there is Hastinapur, and both of them are living. So, in one, some ways, that purpose of training him in mace fighting is okay. You have a hunger for power, you have a hunger for position, you have that, and you have your space. But unfortunately, see, there is kama, which is also a part of the purusharthas, dharma, artha, kama, and moksha. But Krishna talks about in the demoniac people, it is not just kama, it is kama which is dushpura. Kamam ashritya dushpuram. Dushpura is not all desire is always insatiable. Some desires, we fulfill them and we move forward. But, so what kama is present in everywhere, everyone. And Krishna says, dharma aviruddho bhuteshu kamosmi bharatarshama. If we didn't have desires, you know, we wouldn't be conscious beings. To be conscious is to be desirous. So when the desire is directed according to dharma, then that is virtuous. In fact, that can be a manifestation of Krishna. But when the desire becomes so great, so insatiable that dharma is flouted, so then it becomes a problem. Then it becomes a serious problem. So what Balaram does to Duryodhana is he gives him an opportunity. Yeah, you want power, you want position. Yeah, I will train you to do that and be satisfied. But it is time that reveals that he has just not just kama, but he has a kama which is dushpura, insatiable desire. Just like sometimes we say that when we scratch a itch, we say if you have a rash and we scratch the rash, well, it will worsen. But that's not true always. No, it's only when the skin is diseased and then we scratch the itch, that's when it worsens. But sometimes, you know, we might just normally, I might feel like scratching my nose. Now, it's not that because I scratch my nose, the rest of my life I'm going to keep scratching noses. So it's not that every desire that someone has, indulging in that desire is going to make that desire like a blazing fire which is going to consume us forever. So it's when already there is a rash, already there is a disease, and then there is scratching, that makes it worse. So there is kama and there is kamam ashritya dushpuram. This kama is this desire which is one part of a person's life. But kamam ashritya dushpuram means when desire is, I mean desire and insatiable desire, and insatiable desire is what we take shelter of. There are three things over here: kama, dushpura and ashritya. So we may have insatiable desires, but if we are taking shelter of Krishna, we can become purified of those insatiable desires also. Gradually the desires will come under control. But instead of taking shelter of Krishna, one takes shelter of that desire itself. Then that person is demoniac. So Duryodhan turns out to be like that. So Balram opposes Krishna at times, or he seems to oppose Krishna, because he, in one sense, is exhibiting the compassion of Krishna through his manifestation as Balram. Just like we say Nityananda Prabhu is much more merciful than Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Lord Chaitanya is merciful, but Nityananda Prabhu is even more merciful. So Balaram is extraordinarily merciful to Duryodhan, that he gives him the facility by which he can fulfill some of his desires. But unfortunately, Duryodhan is not satisfied by that. And actually, when Duryodhan tries to have Draupadi disrobed and Balaram hears about it, Balaram is enraged. The Mahabharata describes it. That Balaram is enraged. He said that the Kauravas should be punished for this. How could they do something like this? But then Balaram goes and meets Duryodhan. And Duryodhan spins his own story. Now it's remarkable how the same story, if it is told by a different person, the facts can be the same, but the story can seem to be entirely different. That is actually, if you study history from different perspectives. So then history, as who is writing history, is as important as what is being written. So somehow Duryodhan spins the whole story in such a way that he says, you know, I did nothing. It is Yudhishthir who gambled, and it is Yudhishthir who put Draupadi on the stake, and it is Yudhishthir who lost Draupadi. So what happens is that because Balaram has some affection for Duryodhan, so Duryodhan has that effect. And then before the Kurukshetra war, or when the exile gets over, at that time when they are discussing how to move forward, so Balaram tells Yudhishthir that when you approach the Kauravas, don't be in a demanding mood, be in a humble mood. He says that, you know, it was after all Yudhishthir, it was you who chose to gamble. So the Pandavas are bewildered. He says, Balaram at that same time seemed to be so angry for us. But now he seems to be angry with us. He says, what happened? So then eventually, I'll conclude with this incident, or within this framework of resistance. That when the final battle happens, at that time, the final battle of the Kurukshetra battle, that is between a Kurukshetra war, that is between Duryodhana and Bhima. When that happens, it is Bhima who hits Duryodhana below the waist. Now, why does he do that? See, the Mahabharata depicts the real world, and it is as in the real world, sometimes it is that shatho shatyam, that with the cunning one has to be cunning. So what happens is that Duryodhan and Bhima are well matched. Duryodhan is somewhat more skilled, and Bhima is stronger. But unfortunately, the whole match gets rigged. They said the gambling match was rigged earlier because it was unfair. Duryodhan was like a professional gamester. And Sakshaguni was a professional gamester and Yudhishthir was just an amateur. So in this case, what has happened? Gandhari's blessing makes it in such a way that whatever Bhima does, Bhima just can't win. So Bhima hits and hits and hits. He hits Duryodhana so many times. But nothing happens to Duryodhana. It's like, you know, what can Bhima do after that? He's just hitting and hitting at it. There was one cricket match in which one bowler, you know, he had this opposing team's best batsman bowl three times. But three times the ball hit the stumps, but the bails did not fall. And when that happened, the batsman was declared not out. And finally the bowler became so frustrated by that. So imagine there is a cricket match in which the stumps are arranged in such a way that no matter what you do, the stumps will never fall. No matter how hard you hit the ball, the stumps stay as it is. And then what do you do? Is the bowler just runs down and comes and bowls? And the batsman sometimes hits the bowler, sometimes the bowler gets through the batsman. But there's no way the bowler can get the batsman out. So what do you do at that time? And if the rules are made in such a way that the only way the batsman get out is by bowling him out. There's no other way to the catch out or LBW or whatever, nothing is there. Then the only way the bowler can survive, I thought the bowler is just getting exhausted, bowling, 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 and the batsman is just hitting. Even if he misses, nothing happens to the batsman. So then, there's just no way the match is rigged in such a way that you cannot win fairly. So that's what happens to Bhima. There are two, three times when Bhima hits such a blow to Duryodhana that the Mahabharata says that that blow could have actually rent not just a boulder apart, but a hill apart. The such force with which he hits. And because you know, whenever a person is going to hit somebody, they make themselves vulnerable. Because if you are going to hit the body of the other person, that means the weapon of the other person, you don't have the resource to guard yourself. So when Bhima is hitting Duryodhana, Duryodhana is just passively taking the blows. Duryodhana is also hitting back. So what happens? Bhima's blows keep hitting Duryodhana, but nothing happens to Duryodhana. On the other hand, Duryodhana's blows are hitting Bhima, and Bhima is getting exhausted because of the effort of fighting, and Bhima is also getting injured. So there is just no way left for Bhima to win. And that's why Bhima decides to hit him below the waist. And that too Krishna tells him at that time. That's why he does it. But when that happens, Bhima has been hitting so many blows, not no effect. But then there's one blow below the waist, and it's like that one blow, when that blow hits, everybody is like match over. Like the bones of Duryodhan break apart. And at that time, Balram explodes. He says, this is unfair. How dare Duryodhana be? How dare Bhima hit Duryodhana like this? So what is happening over there is that in this particular pastime, Balram represents the letter of the law and Krishna represents the spirit of the law. That from the letter of the law perspective, Balram is right. Bhima shouldn't have it below the waist. But if the fight is already made unfair by some extraneous factor, then what do? Then the only way to restore fairness is to bring an extraneous factor back. So that's what is done over here. So there is Krishna pacifies Balram at that time. Now of course Balram doesn't get pacified. Balram just walks away. But what Balram says at that time is very revealing. So even in that anger and displeasure, there is a glorification of Krishna's omnipotence. And he says, Krishna, you know, by your reasoning you can convince anybody about anything. So by your madhuraya gira valgu vakyaya budhamano gaya pushkarekshana. The gopis say that Krishna, your voice is sweet. Madhuraya gira valgu vakyaya. That not only the voice is sweet, but the words you speak are also sweet with the voice. And they are so sweet, so normally we might be able to fool somebody who is not very intelligent. But to fool somebody who is very intelligent, that requires an extraordinary level of intelligence. So, buddha mano gaya, even the wise get bewildered. So that's how, so the way the gopis glorify Krishna in the Gopi Gita, Balaram also glorifies Krishna while walking away in a half apparently. But through that resistance to Krishna's will, Balaram creates moral complexity in the conception of divinity, because Balaram is also in one sense God. And he enables us to, he brings a different flavor to the pastimes of Krishna. So Balaram of course is the Guru Tattva. And just as Balaram becomes the messenger of Krishna to the gopis, who are separated from Krishna, similarly the spiritual master is the messenger of Krishna for all of us. So the spiritual master is Balaram manifesting in a way that is accessible for us. And by meditating on the pastimes of Balaram, we can understand both the complexity and the compassion of the conception of divinity. And similarly, we can understand both the complexity and the compassion of the spiritual master. The spiritual master is compassionate. But while being compassionate, the compassion of the spiritual master is not something that we can always understand by our intelligence. When Prabhupada made some plans, devotees couldn't understand. No, what is the point of this? But the point of the spiritual master is an exalted position. So there's compassion, but there's also complexity. And that's why the same Chaitanya Charitamrita which says that Vaishnavas are Karuna Purna. They also say Vaishnavera Kriyamudra Vigyana Bhujaya. Even the wise can sometimes not understand. So similarly, Balaram's pastimes, we can try to get some understanding of it. So we understand that there is a compassion within it, but also there is complexity within it. So we can all pray to Lord Balaram that he blesses us so that we can all get the strength to resist temptation, the bala by which we can resist kama whenever it becomes dushpura. And he can give us the rama so that we can do raman in bhakti, so that we can delight in his pastimes, in Krishna's pastimes, and delight in his service, in the Lord's service, and thereby transcend this world. That is the glory of Lord Balaram. Shri Balaram ji ki, Shri Balaram Purnima ki jai. Thank you very much. Do we have time for questions? Okay. Yeah. Does anyone have any questions? Gaurangpur, you want to comment anything? So I'll quickly summarize and then we'll stop. So I spoke today about Lord Balaram. I spoke about Balaram is the best friend of Krishna. And how? I talked about four things. Persistence, empathy, assistance and resistance. Persistence, he is there with Krishna through all the phases of his life. And empathy, he is there with Krishna when nobody understands him. Either the Vrajavasis, because he's away from them, and the Bhatravasis, because they suspect that Krishna will go away from him. So he is there for Krishna when nobody is able to understand him. And then how does he assist Krishna? In many ways, but especially when he chooses to become a messenger of Krishna and goes on behalf of Krishna to Vrindavan. In resistance, he opposes Krishna at times so as to bring a flavor of a special flavor in the relationship. Relationships are wonderful, are exciting when there is a blend of predictability and unpredictability. So Balaram brings moral complexity to the conception of divinity. And his affection for Duryodhan is his compassion, that he gives Duryodhan the opportunity to fulfill his desires within limits. But unfortunately, Duryodhan's desire is excessive. And I concluded how Balram represents the Guru, and the spiritual master also has compassion and complexity, both of it. Shri Balram ji ki jai, Shri Prabhupada ki jai, Gaura Bhakta Vrinda ki jai, Tai Gaura Premanande. Thank you very much.